new session. We have agenda item number 5. I just want to say how much you skimped on the staff report, you know. My workers' comp complaint for broken backs in the mail.
We'll see what we can do for bringing dollies for the next board meeting when we have a basin plan amendment.
Oh, thank you from the bottom of my.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant by a dolly. Sorry.
Okay, so this is the hearing procedure, and the meeting's been called to order. Opening statements. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of public hearing on resolution number R1-2015-0018, amending the water quality control plan for the North Coast Region to update water quality objectives. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand and raise your right hand and take the following oath? Okay. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? Okay. We have a small enough number that I can observe who it was, but it's helpful when you testify to say you've been sworn. And to keep it very clear. Timelines for presentation are as follows. Staff, 25 minutes. Interested public, 3 minutes. And at this time, we'll start with the staff presentation. And I did want to say these amendments to the Basin Plan are very important documents that will guide a whole host of items. It's not like a permit that goes away or individual facts. This applies for the future. So with that, please begin.
Thank you, Chair Corbett. I am Jeremiah Puget, environmental scientist of your staff. I have been sworn in. It's a pleasure to be back before the board today with this proposed basin plan amendment. So with that, as you stated, we are here to consider amending the water quality control plan for the North Coast Region, Section 3, Water Quality Objectives. I'll mention now that, a part of the proposal is the rename for convenience. An editorial move is to rename the section to chapters. So you'll hear me talking section, subsection, and chapters, but just know that they're currently referred to as sections, so we don't want to presume approval, and just wanted to mention that in case it gets a little confusing when we hop back and forth between sections and chapters. With that being said, I'm going to go over the goals or the overview of the presentation today, which will cover the goals of this amendment, the background and the amendment development, both public process and the thoughts that we put into it, kind of discuss the existing regulatory framework, as that's a key issue today in our approach to this amendment. We will present on discussions with the revised new water quality objectives. We will talk the implementation of those objectives, and we will discuss public comments. So to give you a little bit of background on this project, the approach to the amendment included revisions to the water quality objectives and a reorganization and kind of update to Section 4 implementation plans. The objectives and implementation plans are both outdated and need revisions and reorganization, not only on the scientific end, but also on the editorial and ease of reading. But really the point for the objectives today that you'll be seeing is to more cohesively reflect and comprehensively reflect the existing science, and we'll cover some of the existing regulatory programs. In 2009, this board identified this project as a priority for planning staff, and work began on it in 2009. It soon became evident, though, that the original scope of work was too large to undertake as one, so we split the amendment into two separate phases. The one that's before you today, with the water quality objective revisions, which includes groundwater toxicity, chemical constituents, dissolved oxygen, as well as our best and most sincere attempt to increase the clarity and the transparency on the translation of narrative water quality objectives. And then phase two, as you keep hearing from time to time, is the larger groundwater protection strategy, which will also go with, as we see, and things keep getting tacked onto that project, as I notice, but we see that it's also to include a larger overhaul on, so the implementation plans section is a bit more reflective of the current programs and how we do our business, and might be an easier read. So in, we first kicked off this, the public process in July of 2010. We conducted a couple of public workshops down here and then up north in November of 2011. And the first draft of this version, of this amendment, phase one, came out in February of 2012. We had numerous public comments. We held a workshop. And we tried to process that. And but there was a key point that I need to make here for you folks, and that is that in 2012, one of the issues with the proposal is the prospective incorporation of Title 22 California Code of Regulations, the maximum contaminant levels. Now, it was before the courts on that issue that prospective incorporation into the basin plan and any future changes would automatically be changed within the basin plan. And that has been visited through other regions and was before the courts, and it was decided in 2012 in this decision that that prospective incorporation was legal. And so we that was reflected when we get to the second version of this proposal, which we released in February of 2013. We again conducted a public workshop, came before the board, and you had the opportunity to hear some public comments on that as well. So we'll dig a little bit deeper into those. The first two versions of the draft amendment were released for public comment, again, in 2012 and 2013. They both included a new narrative objective for groundwater toxicity. They both included the updates to chemical constituents with prospective incorporation of Title 22, MCLs, and they both included the narrative water quality objective translation policy. The public comments that we received had concerns with the general chemical constituents objective and the prospective incorporation, but as I noted, that decision solved that issue, the CASA v. State Board. Additionally, there was concern that we had not incorporated the MCLs into the basin plan, and that hadn't been appropriately recognized or analyzed in the staff report, and both the considerations required by Water Code Section 13241 and the California Environmental Quality Act. Regarding the new groundwater toxicity objective, there were comments both in support and opposition of it. The opposition thought the objective was unnecessary with the existing chemical constituents objectives, but as Regional Water Board staff maintain, this is for the explicit protection of human health and also for the purposes of clarity in adopting this objective. Additionally, there were some recommendations that the narrative narrative translation policy and how it should be phrased and what it should do and what it should say. All right, so after two rounds of public comment, we thought it would be necessary to revise our approach and rethink that narrative translation policy and appropriately revise the staff report to include the California Environmental Quality Act analysis as well as 13241. So in 2015, we re-released another public version, the third public release that we had of this. And that included the narrative toxicity objective for groundwater, updating chemical constituents. But this time it also included the dissolved oxygen objective for surface waters, which was a revision that you may recall this board approved the Klamath TMDL, I think in 2010, and the site-specific objectives associated with that. At that time, we had the adequate science and have done great work done by Alita Mangelsdorf on relating that objective to the rest of the region. And so we're here to bring that before you today as well. When it comes to the narrative translation policy, it appears there was more confusion around the policy and its purpose. So rather than continue to debate and justify how we saw the policy, we decided to take another route and try to clarify what we saw as some of the root issues surrounding the confusion of the regulation or the proposed regulation. So rather than adding a narrative translation policy, we are proposing to add language to the introduction of the basin plan, that section to outline water quality objectives a little bit better, and also add a new section on discharge limitations and cleanup levels at the end of the section under the subsection compliance with water quality objectives. The section also has new language about trying to discern the difference between that narrative and numeric criteria. To be clear, the current approach is simply to include a general explanation of water quality objectives and how they are applied in consideration with other plans and policies like the anti-degradation requirements when developing permits or the cleanup policy from the State Board Resolution 9249 and how then it applies to our regulatory oversight of cleanup actions. In 2012 and 2013, again, I'll reiterate that there was no CEQA analysis with this staff report, so we spent a good part of the year really ramping that up and adding to the staff report. We took the perspective that it technically wasn't necessary, but we did it out of abundance of caution and full disclosure as well in preparing those analysis. So before going into the objectives themselves, it is important to take a look at the existing regulatory framework, and this was what we did with the CEQA as well, is establishing the baseline of environmental impact, but before we can do that, we have to establish the baseline of the existing regulation. So we also revised that write-up in trying to better articulate what it was that we were proposing. And so while the basin plan, as many of you acknowledge, is a cornerstone of Region 1's regulation, the policies adopted by the State Board play a very important role in how we determine discharge limitations on permits and how we develop cleanup levels when working under Water Code Section 13304. Just to mention a few, the anti-degradation policy, Resolution 6816, which requires us to maintain high-quality waters and to use best practical treatment control to maintain those high-quality waters. As I mentioned before, State Board Order 9249 requires that we clean up to background, or if not reasonable, to a level which ensures the maximum benefit to the people and does not unreasonably affect past, present, and probable beneficial uses or violate water quality objectives. The State Implementation Policy, which see right here, is for toxic standards, which applies these values, federally promulgated criteria, California Toxics Rule, and is the implementation policy, one of the parts, along with the Schedules of Compliance Policy, for NPDES discharges. And then also the Sources of Drinking Water Policy, on-site systems, and so on. As noted, all of these policies really do come into play when we're taking a look at how we come up with a discharge limitation or an effluent limitation. So with laying that foundation, let's move on to our water quality objectives. The existing objective for chemical constituents is both narrative and numeric. It's a hybrid. The first portion of that applies MCLs to the uppermost limits of waters with the municipal and domestic beneficial use. The second portion is narrative and protects from adverse impacts to agriculture. And the third portion applies water body specific objectives as listed in Table 3-1 for specific conductance, total dissolved solids, pH, still dissolved oxygen, although, as you noted, we're proposing to move that, hardness and boron. Additionally, there's Table 3-2, which we are proposing to completely remove because it's the outdated version of Title 22, and the last time that was updated is in 1993. Therefore, the proposal that we're making for the revised chemical constituents objective is revising that narrative portion so it applies to all beneficial uses and is not just limited to agriculture. We're adding language regarding the prevention of nuisance, which is required under Porter Cologne, and we again are proposing to delete Table 3-2 as is out of date. We are going to propose that the prospective incorporation, as I walked you through, has already been determined by the courts to be legal, and that is the prospective incorporation, again, of primary and secondary maximum contaminant levels from Title 22. And we will continue to retain Table 3-1 and those site-specific objectives. As far as the new groundwater toxicity objective that we are proposing, it's needed to fill some important regulatory gaps. And it functions in that way, just as many of our narratives do. And it should be noted that there are only a limited number of maximum contaminant levels out there in comparison to the actual number of chemicals, and such an objective would be useful when there is no MCL. Additionally, this objective makes it explicit that we are working towards our intent is for the protection of human health. However, it should be noted that adding the toxicity objective for groundwater will not fundamentally alter the limits that are included in future permits, orders, or other regulatory actions as compared to the existing authorities. Case in point, again, being a little redundant, but the anti-degradation policy or Order 9249, which directs us to go to background. As far as the dissolved oxygen, the purpose of this amendment is, as I mentioned, it's the same science that we applied to the Klamath River TMDL, and the revisions are intended to better protect sensitive aquatic organisms from depressed levels of DO, to better ensure the natural pattern and range of DO variation is maintained in those water bodies unable to meet the aquatic life criteria, and to reduce the possibility of natural variation is erroneously identified as a DO impairment. So moving on to the implementation language or the description of the existing implementation that we have, much care was taken in doing these revisions to sections 3 of the basin plan and the subsequent subsections of compliance with water quality objectives, which you find at the end of that chapter. Our region actually attempted to resolve this issue in 1993 with the Basin Plan Amendment by inserting the language and this is a footnote to Table 3-2, that the values included in this table are maximum contaminant levels for the purpose of groundwater and surface water discharge and cleanup. Other water quality objectives, taste and odor thresholds, secondary MCLs, and policies, State Water Board, policy with respect to maintain high quality waters, our anti-degradation policy, that are more stringent may apply. Unfortunately, time has shown that this brief explanation was insufficient, and we have been in the process of trying to further elaborate on this topic of water quality objectives and the development of discharge limits and cleanup levels for several years now, as I mentioned. So after the second round of public comment in 2013, Regional Water Board staff began to examine how we could achieve these project goals. As such, staff no longer proposed the adoption of a region-specific translation policy, and rather than condensing all of these state policies into what was our attempt of a regional translation policy for narrative objectives, we decided to simply go through, again, that general description of what these are, and by existence, narrative water quality objectives need translation. So, but for example, I'd like to point out, again, reiterate that we continue to rely on the state implementation policy for toxic standards as the mechanism by which we fulfill the federal requirements for the 126 priority pollutants and which outlines the process for NPDES discharge limitations. So, again, the current approach is really just to explain generally how water quality objectives are applied in consideration with these other policies and requirements. And to summarize the language that we chose, we're further defining narrative and numeric objectives. We're further describing the purpose and application of both in the beginning and at the end of the chapter. And we are also, again, revising that section on compliance with water quality objectives. And as I have, as I'm reiterating, we are outlining the process or the general framework for discharge limitations and cleanup levels. And finally, we are also adding explicit language on the use of validated site-specific data, numeric values from scientific peer review literature, and numeric values established by other state and federal agencies as sources of sources for information when implementing our narrative objectives. So again, the programs stay the same. The implementation of water quality objectives, though, it's a dynamic process which takes into account the complexity of the discharge of pollutants, site-specific factors that affect water quality, and the existing laws and regulations. When developing permits or cleanup orders, it's necessary to review the beneficial uses, apply both narrative and numeric water quality objectives, and the relevant existing laws, regulations, and policies. So the next few slides that I've put together are intended to generally depict how our objectives intertwine with our policies when developing discharge limitations or cleanup levels. Again, these are just some generic illustrations of the existing framework and should not be interpreted as policy or a rule. I'm just throwing these illustrations up to guide through this concept as visually as opposed to just the list that we've gone over. So the anti-degradation policy, it directs us to protect and maintain high-quality waters and is sometimes represented as natural background. Water quality objectives are the limits, levels, or characteristics necessary to protect beneficial uses. And it should be also noted that the upper limit of a water's assimilative capacity is defined by the water quality objectives. Also, the range of assimilative capacity that you see in here does vary depending on the constituent or the specific water body characteristics. So once we recognize this as the starting points, we can turn to how we implement our programs a bit better. When permitting discharges, we are apportioning the water's assimilative capacity. As for developing discharge limitations and NPDES permits, as I've stated, we use the state implementation policy for toxic standards. Again, that has the promulgated federal criteria and the California toxics rule. However, it must be noted that Water Code Section 13263 states that a regional board in prescribing requirements need not authorize the utilization of the assimilative capacities of the receiving waters. So, if the board is compelled to do so, they can have lower limits in a permit for protection of beneficial uses and for savings in the assimilative capacity of receiving water. Just to be clear, this is not just limited to NPDES authority. This is, again, our general authority under Water Code Section 13263. In cleanups, assimilative capacity is not central to the issue as we are regulating the cleanup of an unauthorized discharge. The State Board policies directs us to start with anti-degradation and background as the cleanup goal. However, if achieving zero natural background is infeasible, then we set the cleanup levels higher, but at levels that are protective of beneficial uses. So this revised approach to the amendment was detailed in the staff report, and we received public comments in regards to the February 2015 staff report. We also held a public workshop in March and had attendance from the Russian River Keeper, the Sonoma County Water Agency, and the US EPA. The public comment period closed on April 13th, and we received letters from Russian River Keeper, Sonoma County Water Agency, and the City of Santa Rosa. Turning more to the comments that we received from the City of Santa Rosa, in their April 2013 letter, their comments on version 2 of this proposal, the city expressed concern with the staff report and the proposed amendment, and their comments were centered really around the theme of certainty and their ability to plan for future projects. As we previously noted, we evaluated the project goals, our precision of language and the intent behind the amendment, and made several changes to the staff report and to the third draft, the 2015 draft of the proposed amendment. So the comment letter that we received on the 2015 draft incorporated by reference all of their previous comments, including the CEQA and 13241 concerns. We've gone through several meetings with them, and I believe we have narrowed down some of their concerns, although I believe they are here to speak today on their general concerns, and so we'll look forward to that. And I'll go over some of the issues on how we narrowed them down a little bit. In 2015, their comment letter took issue with the proposed groundwater toxicity objective, as it was referenced at one point in time in that 2015 version. It was referenced that it was also for the protection of aquatic life. And the City of Santa Rosa disagreed with the use of a narrative objective and were concerned that we'd be applying it by means of applying federal surface water criteria inappropriately to groundwater. And so they have expressed that concern of how we might misuse such an objective. They also took issue with the proposed change to the chemical constituents objective and our proposal to apply the narrative to all beneficial uses as opposed to agriculture. They did note that we're abandoning the specific translator policy, but raised issues that, from their perspective, they thought we were failing to comply on the federal law requirements and provide fair notice and clear bounds and a rational basis for the implementation. So the meetings that we recently had were to frame that there's we aren't trying to change those effluent limits. We're on the process or the implementation of that. It's still the state implementation policy, and that's explicitly referenced in the subsection at the end under discharge limitations and cleanup levels. Additionally, they identified that that we had failed to have a full implementation plan for the newly proposed objective or the revised objective. So we also tried to take care in taking the time to walk them through, just as I have walked you through today, on how we view the existing regulatory framework as our implementation plan currently. So the revisions to the public review draft that we made based on some of those comments is we completely agreed with them in that we have the appropriate surface water objectives to protect. If it's, let's just say a discharge of groundwater was to, there was contaminated groundwater and it ended up discharging to surface waters. The theme that you will recognize throughout the staff report and a lot of discussions that you've had lately before you have to do with the interconnectedness of groundwater and surface waters. And we were getting at that with our original write-up of how that should, that groundwater toxicity objective should also protect aquatic life and plants and animals. But that got misinterpreted to how we would then be applying that. And since we have the appropriate criteria for surface water protection, we agreed and we struck the reference to aquatic life within that objective. Another thing, when it comes to the chemical constituents and dissolved oxygen objectives, we feel comfortable and confident with what we had proposed and are not proposing any additional changes to that. And then as far as clarifying the narrative and numeric objectives and how they're implemented, again, we went over how we are viewing our existing regulatory program. But the public review draft actually had a proposed change to Chapter 4, which outlines just our general authorities, and it was intended to be educational, non-substantive, just to put it out there so folks could understand that here's how the Water Board goes about its business. And that was viewed as a failed attempt to develop the implementation plan. So we didn't want to continue to misrepresent that, so we scrapped that whole section too, taking that feedback to heart and trying to make sure that we can come together on how we view the regulation that we're proposing here. As far as additional public comments, we also, as I mentioned, received them from Russian River Keeper and Sonoma County Water Agency. Russian River Keeper was mostly supportive of it. They did ask that we maybe, instead of removing Table 3-2, put a footnote in the basin plan that says these values may be outdated and go check Title 22 for the latest reference. However, given today's technology, we hadn't made the proposal that how about we do what other regions have done, and the State Board has a really nice link to Title 22 values, public health goals. And so not within the basin plan, because one of the things as planners, we like to keep the plan timeless, if we may, and not be out of date. And that's an opportunity where we again find ourselves in the same situation that we are, misleading people by having numeric values in that table. So let's just go ahead and reference it. In some communication with Riverkeeper, they didn't take issue with that response that we gave them. They did want more detail and clarification on that groundwater surface water interaction, in which we pointed them to different parts of the staff report, saying yes, it's embedded throughout. And we think that we have adequately described the importance of shallow groundwater and the role that that plays on keeping our aquatic ecosystems, our surface water ecosystems, healthy and resilient. And then the Sonoma County Water Agency had a very specific and limited concern or comment with regards to the pesticide objective for surface waters. They wanted us to revise to where it was very clear that it was applying just a language change semantically for how and where we reference the protection of beneficial uses or shall not cause nuisance. We agreed. We made a change, not verbatim, but they seemed also satisfied and happy that we took their comments. So with that, I happily recommend adoption of Resolution R1-2015-008, amending the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast Region to update Section 3 Water Quality Objectives, and I'd be more than happy to entertain any questions or comments that the Board has at this time.
Okay. Board members?
Mr. Chair? One slight correction. I think it's 0018, by the way. Sorry. You said 008, I believe.
Oh.
As a resolution. Yeah,
that's
you forgot one.
There. Good catch. Right. Thank you.
It's all right. It's a small thing. Hey, I wanted to, for one, just start off to say, for one, thank you for this work. I think we're way beyond or at finally now and at the point where this finally came to being done. It's obviously been a long road. And I know you're not the only one to work on it, Jeremiah, and I thank everybody that's worked on this thing before. Section 3.2 has, or Table 3.2 and some of the language in specifically in this section of the basin plan was highly dated. And so it's very topical and timely to get to this. And I very much appreciate going through this whole thing. At the same time, I got to admit, I read a lot of this. I read most all of this, and I kept looking for that heading that said translation policy. And it took me a long time to figure out there is no policy in here that explicitly walks me through how to do this. And I very much got to the end of it, like I told you the other day, and I thought, wow, they actually translate it through what we have, right?
All right.
Fundamentally, 6816 is the beginning, right? I was told 6816 was written out of this office. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but I was told 6816 was written out of Region 1. In some ways, I believe it because, you know what, I think that we really do have high-quality water here. We are a region that is blessed, and I'll knock on wood when I say this, blessed with an abundance of high-quality water, both in surface water and groundwater. And I do very much take 6816 as a fundamental basis of how we then approach water quality here. And to me, it's the basis from which I look through our water quality at. I've been told that there's anywhere from 40 to 60,000 domestic wells in Sonoma County alone. There's probably many times that in the North Coast itself. We really do use groundwater here in a way that a lot of the other part of the state really does, and our parts of the state don't. I have a domestic well. I drank a whole thermos of it this morning. And I'm blessed with high-quality water, and I think that our job as an agency is absolutely to be highly protective of that water. And 6816 is a very elegant document. I think it's all of a page and a half, and it basically gets right to the point. At the same time, 92, 49, 88, 63, and all the other ones you showed are equally valid in the basis for how we guide ourselves through protection of water quality. And I think that, again, it took me a while to get through this document and get it through my hard head that, wow, we're actually translating this through existing policy and statements. And I think that's actually right, too, because that's settled. That's who we, as an agency in the state of California, has come to today, and that's the track that we got here. In the fundamental either resolution or by policy or by regulation, that's how we've gotten here and the structure from which we work under. And from that standpoint, this isn't really anything new. It really codifies and discusses then what is the basis of where we're at now and how we got here. And again, in Region 1, I think that really, really matters. Let me ask you, from a translation standpoint, though, or how we go forward, you know, groundwater protection policy, can I ask you to step out from this? If we take your last recommendation and adopt this, and it goes forth, and what comes out of this? Does it get into Chapter 4? And what's some of the things that you envision coming in the future that will then, because this is a fundamental change, and out of these changes that we partake on as an agency comes new things. So what comes of this?
Well, that's an excellent question, Board Member Noren. Thank you for the recognition also and the very articulate way of stating what we were really trying to get across with the staff report. So thank you for that. I'm thumbing through my folder here just to, because I always carry around as a basin planner a copy of the triennial review priorities. Don't leave home without it. And, you know, I know you don't have it in front of you, but if I go down to what we have identified as project number, I think it's the fifth priority perhaps. Where are we on that? Yes. 3B, the 2014 ranking was number 5, the groundwater protection policy, including editorial amendments to Chapter 4. I think you're correct in noting that the next steps from here for staff, especially myself, are to begin the formulation of this groundwater protection strategy. As you've noted, the drought has definitely highlighted the importance of groundwater and the resiliency both for Californians, agriculture, and aquatic ecosystems combined. The new Sustainable Groundwater Management Act definitely changes the landscape. I think it's very smart that we put that power within the local agencies, but the state and regional water boards are going to play a really important role, particularly now the fact that the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act moved these regulations from the Department of Resources to the State Water Board as well as the backstop. But most importantly, a fine point is we had a meeting recently with Sonoma County Water Agency staff, and we're discussing the changes in the regulation from qualitative metrics of measurement of sustainability to more numeric and quantitative. And it was their view, as ours, that this basin plan will again have another, shall we say, importance to it, given that context. It's to look at how we can proactively approach groundwater protection. You know, we have a surface water program that goes through impairment identification and then TMDL process and listing, and on our groundwater programs have traditionally been deal with pollution as it comes. And as we start to see things in a grander scale, in a much larger basin context, we understand that we have to coordinate entities, and entities need to be coordinated, monitoring needs to be done, and that adaptive management wheel that you're familiar seeing through our TMDLs needs to be taken subsurface. I talked with Clayton the other day, and I was going to see if he'd allow the trademark subsurface stewardship to go on in the next phase, but we're still working on that. As far as what we need to do, we need to address salt nutrient management plans. We need to address where we can help those local entities. I think I came before you in November with the USGS, November last year, USGS and the Sonoma County Water Agency and the efforts that they have done in their groundwater management plan. So we indeed want to be able to take the opportunities where those local entities want our input. Sonoma County Water Agency has been very instrumental, I think, in being a leader in our region. So we have things to learn from them while we might be able to pass those things along to other areas of the state that have high priority areas. I know that Mendocino County, Humboldt County, Del Norte County, and portions of Siskiyou also have those high prioritized basins that are going to be required to develop a groundwater sustainability management plan. And so our programs that we develop from here on out need to focus on that proactive collaboration and the data-driven adaptive management approach to water quality protection in a more proactive way. I'll wrap that response up with the fact that, just to reiterate, Chapter 4 has traditionally just we've continued to pile on the new TMDLs and action plans as we go, and so it sorely needs just a simple reorganization so we can better discuss groundwater, surface water, and the various state and federal programs that we have into play. Makes it a better read.
Well, you know, and I think again this is timely with the reorganization of the internals of this agency with the groundwater protection unit. This lines up pretty well with that. It lines up pretty well with SGMA and some of the work at state level and legislation and interest in sustainable groundwater. I think it also lines out with, as you said, the Sonoma County Water Agency, USGS collaborative process of managing groundwater. That's happened in Sonoma Valley. It's starting here. I assume it goes to Petaluma. That's the intent, I believe. But the groundwater protection policy then, Jeremiah, I mean, really there are opportunities and there are things coming here that then go through a due amount of public process to develop further policy of how this is going to play out. This is a fundamental change to the Basin Plan, Chapter 3.
That's right.
But the follow-through and the carry-through for this thing has yet to be written, as I see it. And I think there's opportunities. I read, by the way, the comments, the City of Santa Rosa especially comments, and to me, some of this stuff, I get those kind of comments. I think I can see it through that lens. At the same time, the policy development that comes from this, there's stuff to come that I think we can get to some of those questions that are kind of hard to nail down at this point right now to me, the for sure parts of these things. I think that, again, this is super timely. I'm very supportive of what's here. I'm very supportive of protecting high-quality water in our region. So thank you for that. I really, really appreciate this getting done, and all staff, by the way, for all your work on this. I'm really happy about this.
Thank you.
Any other board comments or not? I have some. One, I heard that subsequent to the letter, there had been a meeting with Santa Rosa, and there was more common ground at the end of the meeting than before the meeting. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, we had a really great meeting with Dave Smith and Rita Miller, and we just kind of walked through things as I walked you through them this afternoon, trying to make sure that we firmly understand each other's positions and that some of the issues that we did receive the comments on, we just really wanted to ensure them that and point out where and walk through where we took their comments very, very seriously and then where we just, quite frankly, sit on the opposite side of the table and have a difference of opinion. But it was, I think, a great meeting, productive, and I think it just still goes to show that we do intend on taking all comments such and theirs very, very seriously.
The other thing, I'll just state this. I thought Dr. Schindler's peer review comments and our responses were just of the very highest quality. I was very impressed with both. So I did want to compliment you on that.
Well, and I'll throw that back to Alita then, because that's
okay,
bravo for her.
It's okay. She deserves credit too. I did want to thank you for pointing out 13263 on that we don't have to allocate up to the assimilative capacity. That was the whole purpose of the Port of Cologne Act, was to get away from that. That was the Dickey Act, and there were substantial challenges and burden of proof problems with that. It is important because we're going into TMBLs, which go back to that approach, because you're basically, it's for finding other regulatory mechanisms haven't worked. So I thought it was very timely. I did want to make a comment on beneficial uses. In your documents, you really had three different kinds of beneficial uses, and so I want to state that my position is it's the most broadly read of the beneficial uses. But, for example, we had beneficial uses already designated. That's great. We quoted the Port of Cologne Act on past, present, and future probable beneficial uses. And that allows future designations. And then my interpretation is for individual permits based upon specific facts and circumstances can protect beneficial uses, whether they've been previously designated or not. So I just wanted to have that interpretation put on this because I know that when I read it, I got there, but it took a little while to get there. Now, getting on to the RADA sheet that somehow, I'm not sure, got distributed up here, or if it got distributed, got lost up here.
Okay.
So we need to get that, I think, before the board starts proceeding. We can go ahead with the public hearing, and maybe someone can track that down.
Great.
And John, can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Which is that if you could outline your suggestions on the change sheet, and then staff can distribute it to the other board members. I was hoping it could come from you first.
Well, that's what I'm getting.
You need to
one
have
sentence
it
away from that clarification.
Very good, thanks.
My understanding is that out of the original discussions I had with staff, number three was scratched because that was merely answering whether something was included, and it was. Number five was scratched because it would be better taken up on Section 5. And so that remains 1, 2, 4, and 6, and then there are RADA sheets for those. And so my understanding is you want a motion from the board on those, on 1, 2, 4, and 6. Is that correct? That's my understanding.
This is your counsel, Samantha Olson. Just so people are following along, there are just several sort of editorial, non-substantive changes that when you reviewed the package, we went over. And so I'm not sure people know the content of them. So maybe
we'd have to read. I'm trying to even go what's in the staff and what's on the boards to get that.
Some people don't have the email we sent you when he's saying some numbers were crossed out. They were just answers to questions.
My understanding is they got erased from our errata sheets, the ones that got crossed out. Is that correct?
There are a few items that got dropped. We can beam them up on the screen.
No. I want to get them off the table.
Right.
Then one last comment to answer very briefly Board Member Noren's comments. My understanding is in Section 4 and 5, the future sections, we will have write-ups that will further go to groundwater, and will further go to tribal trust, and will further go to public trust doctrine, to try and add a little additional flesh and bones to what we're doing. And I'm hoping that we'll look to methods of protecting infrastructure, such as roads, if they're going to fall into the ground, and that we have just that we flesh this out. So I think your comments were right on the mark. The reason I'm not going there is I've been told it's coming back to us in a good form.
Yeah. Hear you loud and clear. Yes.
Thanks for that, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Now, is everyone sort of clear where we are procedurally? We'll open it up for public comment. Then we'll have to have a board motion on the errata sheet changes, and then a vote on the major motion. And then I just want to confirm that as amended by staff, there are no objections to 1, 2, 4, and 6 at the current time. Yeah. Okay.
Well, just I think Jeremiah should walk through for the other board members what those are.
Right. No, we have to walk through it, but I'm trying to get staff that hopefully can – I'm trying to establish this has been well circulated to staff. They know it's coming. They don't object to the specific legal language because they wrote it and they wanted it to come from the board, but there's no ongoing objection.
That's correct. We do not object to the suggested additions.
So, with that, if you have any comments, or otherwise, we'll open it up for the public hearing.
Sounds good.
Okay. We have Rita Miller from the City of Santa Rosa Water Department.
Good afternoon. I'm Rita Miller, and I'm representing the City of Santa Rosa Water Department this afternoon, and I've been sworn in. First, before I begin, I'd like to request extending my comment period from 3 to 5 minutes, if you would.
Considered done.
Thank you. I'd first like to express appreciation to Regional Water Board staff for working with the city as they prepared the proposed basin plan amendments. Your staff dedicated time to listen to our concerns, and we had a very constructive dialogue. The city supports and very much appreciates the modifications that were made to the proposed basin plan amendments in response to our comments, i.e. compliance schedule provisions and the anti-degradation policy requirements. We thank your staff for their willingness to consider our suggested changes. That being said, the city still has significant concern about the direction of the remaining proposed basin plan amendments and how implementation of those amendments will affect the city, our ratepayers, and the local economy in the future. The proposed basin plan amendments favor a much more generalized narrative approach to water quality objectives and regulation, and remove more specific numeric objectives that have more clearly governed activities to date. As we discussed with your staff, we're concerned about the tremendous uncertainty this produces for the city, as we won't be able to gauge the regulatory requirements that might apply to a given project or activity. As you know, the city prides itself on tackling innovative projects to protect and improve the natural environment. However, our ability to create, fund, and sustain these types of projects can hinge on whether we're able to predict and comply with relevant regulatory requirements. Provisions that foster a moving target compliance approach could negatively impact city projects and unreasonably increase ratepayer costs, an outcome we want to avoid. If the board decides to move forward with this approach, the city hopes and expects thoughtful and reasonable implementation of the proposed narrative objectives. The proposed groundwater objective for toxicity also raises huge concern and uncertainty about the direction of future regulation in this arena, especially since surface water toxicity objectives and existing drinking water standards for groundwater already adequately protect relevant natural resources and drinking water supplies. While we appreciate the board's desire for regulatory tools that authorize staff to protect groundwater supplies, we believe these tools already exist in the basin plan and applicable laws, and that the proposed groundwater objective for toxicity is unnecessary. The proposed groundwater objective for toxicity is too broad and difficult to predict in its implementation. We're concerned that it will likely lead to inconsistent regulatory mandates and or the imposition of heightened regulatory requirements that may not be necessary or cost-effective. For these reasons, the city requests that the Regional Water Board remove the proposed objective to the basin plan prior to adoption of the amendments today. Finally, we'd like to thank the Regional Water Board for the opportunity to comment on the proposed basin plan amendments, and we look forward to working collaboratively with your staff in the future. Thank you.
Board member comments or questions? Well, I have a couple. First of all, the question of uncertainty is a growing one, and I think you've been heard, and I personally am trying to find the perfect balance between between it, and we will need input as we move along to get there. And I'm on a special district, so I know, you know, we're just building a new plant. We're going, oh, my God, I hope it's not obsolete before it's constructed. So I do want to say I have a lot of sympathy with the city on that. It's extremely hard on a broad general basin plan amendment to get too specific. And then we're faced with every week we hear something different from the state board and on groundwater, and we're trying to get a regulatory framework that at least makes us rationally incorporating those. And so that's one of the issues we're dealing with, is actually even regulatory certainty, uncertainty on our own part. I have kicked around meeting with you folks personally, because we want a better relationship with Santa Rosa. We want you to feel more comfortable with us. It's very tricky because I could end up disqualifying myself from a vote, and I don't want to send a mixed message undercutting staff, but I, given all those qualifications, would look forward to meeting with you folks, and do want to discuss how we get the best working relationship we can, given some differences of opinion, and how can we get at where you feel comfortable enough that what you're building today won't be changed tomorrow unless the state board does it. So I throw that out, but I do want to say I think you have been heard. I'm glad people are working together more. And it also is a little bit of a trust issue. And so I think the talking is probably one of the best ways to deal with trust issues. So
I very much appreciate that, and I'm hoping this is an opportunity to dialogue. So the city has very much appreciated our improving relationship with the Regional Water Board staff. It was really great to have Jeremiah and Alita come to talk with Dave Smith and I last Friday. We very much appreciated it, and we would certainly welcome a conversation with you. So thank you very much for hearing us out. I think we understand your desire to protect the environment, and I think that you understand our concern that as a regulated facility, we want to be able to plan appropriately for the future, and so we just need to know what.
And then, like I said, right now in groundwater, recharge of groundwater, it's hard for anyone to plan. It's just moving very fast at the state level, and so that will cause stress in all of us, and I hope we can reasonably adapt both the regional board and Santa Rosa as much as we can.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I have a question. Might be a question for you. And though I appreciate what we're trying to do is develop a regulatory framework, the need for certainty and consistency resonates very strongly with me. And I appreciate getting rid of an old numerical table that's 25 years old. But is there a replacement? Are there new standards? Are there new numerical standards by the state or some other entity that will serve as your guiding light as you engage with discussions with municipalities? Because the points being raised, in my opinion, are incredibly valid in terms of planning and determining costs to ratepayers. So as much as I appreciate the ability to have wiggle room, at the same time, what is the standard, and who else might be able to provide the standard if we don't put it? And it may not be appropriate to be in this regulatory framework, but is there another standard that can be applied?
Thank you, Board Member Giusti. That's a good question. And if I might turn board's attention to attachment one of the resolution, the proposed language. At the end, the very end of the section, chapter three, discharge limitations and cleanup levels. So the very final paragraph talks about, the last two paragraphs. The second to last paragraph starts out, when it's necessary to derive numeric values in order to develop discharge limitations. So there's an abundance of sources to which we can take data from.
This is on, he's reading from or referring to page 3-10.
Thank you, Matt.
In the clean copy, attachment one.
And so
which
that
is
last
the
paragraph.
Yellow color, it's page 3-10.
Thanks, Matt. So that last paragraph outlines the broadness in which numerical values are assessed. For example, we at the Water Board are a branch of the California Environmental Protection Agency, and in that branch is the Office of Environmental Health Hazard and Assessment. Just one example of where other numerical values such as public health goals or our own division of drinking water now, which develops action levels for where there is an absence of a maximum contaminant level. So there are numerous, and that's what we're getting at here, and there's also processes that are outlined as it mentions and references the State Water Board's database and the compilation of water quality goals. In addition to that, we tried to highlight in the end of the paragraph additional numeric indices and metrics for sediment, which staff put together here at the request of this board during the adoption of all of these sediment TMDLs. So in there, we are referencing, we're not giving you a hard, fast number, but what we are saying is that there is a process, but that process for reaching those numbers, it might change. And if I could use examples that have come before the board, recently, the Humboldt Creamery, and how do we get a TDS value? Well, that TDS value in protecting groundwater and drinking water sources is going to be different for discharge of waste to land than it's going to be to a discharge of to surface water. So we'd be looking for California toxic rule criteria or the any other federally promulgated criteria first there for our surface waters, or in that case, there's actually a numeric value in table 3-1. But when we're looking to the others, it was brought before the board to consider the protection of the agricultural beneficial use, and this board said, well, we'll consider that and maybe allow a special study. So really what I'm getting at, Board Member Giusti, is that the specificity, unfortunately, and I also echo the chair's comments that we wish that we could give that numeric value for each one, but in the just the existence of narratives, they need that translation. So there is a extensive amount of research and site-specific data that has been done on thousands of chemicals from the US EPA, Department of Toxic Substance Control, and when we're going to propose a number to implement an objective, you're going to see that finding, you're going to see that. I know there's been concern that we could just make up a number or pull something out of thin air, but we know better than that as scientists, engineers, and geologists, and are going to produce the most protective value of the beneficial uses, which is our obligation. And I'll turn it over to Alita.
This is Alita Mangelsdorf of your staff. I wanted to add to that explanation that with respect to the specific issue that the city has as an MPDS permit holder and a discharger to surface water, that we follow the state implementation plan to implement NTR and CTR, and that plan has been in place for a long time now and will not change as a result of this amendment. And so that offers the same kind of certainty today as it has since it was first enabled, and describes what the permit limits are for a wide suite of constituents. And I have been sworn in. And then I would also add that you framed your question, Mr. Giusti, around the removal of Table 3-2 from the Basin Plan and what replaces it. And so I just wanted to be clear, in case this hadn't become clear through the presentation, that what the Table 3-2 is a subset of maximum contaminant levels from an old version of Title 22. We are removing that outdated table, which has the specific numbers listed in our Basin Plan, and we're replacing it with prospective incorporation of Title 22. So Title 22 now it will become part of our basin plan. The MCLs, the primary and secondary MCLs, will now be part of our basin plan, the entire list, and we won't need to go and re-up them as they become re-up in Title 22. That'll just happen automatically. So that table still exists. It's just that it's expanded and it's now up to date.
Mr. Chair, excuse me. As an economist, one of the things we study is what people expect, and we all want reasonable expectations. One of the things that I have been asked repeatedly in public appearances is just give me one constant law or rule that I can have forever and ever, and I will abide it. And my response to that is simple. I will do that. You just give me one constant population, and I'll give you one constant rule. But so long as you won't give me that constant population, I cannot do that. And what we're saying, I think, is that things will change. You want constant and predictable things, and I absolutely agree with you. Me too, and everything. Problem is that I don't think we can do that. So I think we're doing about as best we can to say there's not a numeric, but we'll certainly look at it. And doubtless the city of Santa Rosa will be back here with other things 5 years from now that we'll pinge on or impinge on these things. Thank you.
Mr. Board Member.
Well, and one thing just to also further address Board Member Giusti's question is there is so much numbers out there that range. They're all over the board. And I think that's the wisdom of going back and using a 6816 or 9249. I think your cleanups are 9249. Now that, in fact, I got to say, because Craig Hunt's in the room and I've worked with cleanups for 20 years as a consultant, is cleanups are some of the hardest ones to set a cleanup objective out there. And it's actually the PCE examples discussed in the staff report. It's very difficult to address, I want to say the city of Santa Rosa, I very much appreciate your agility, your professionalism, and your work that you do. And absolutely you should plan for the what-ifs out there for your ratepayers, and that's your job. The one thing I can promise you is I can see, and my point to asking Jeremiah about the policy development that comes out of this is because I expect you're going to be at that table developing that policy on the public side of this thing. And that's my expectation, and that I expect that you're going to be a strong player in that, so will others, and that's how we have to do this. And I fully agree with some of the statements of my colleagues that the times are very much changing very rapidly right now with groundwater. Felicia Marcus, the chair of the state board last year at WQCC, gave a very very cogent and intelligent discussion on drought, snowpack, climate change. One thing that struck me was that she made the statement that we're never going to build the reservoir capacity that we're going to lose in snowpack if you take climate change and project out what that is. And that reservoir is actually going to come in the state of California in the form of bank groundwater. And so our groundwater becomes much, much more important. And I think then Sigma becomes much, much more important. And I think the opportunity that we have here, both for the city of Santa Rosa and us as regulatory and the world at large here, is to develop policies that foresee the future to the best that we can with the clarity that we could see today. And at the same time, be highly protective of the value of what we have now as a resource, because the resource that we have now is actually in very short supply. And there's no doubt that I think we're highly blessed here with groundwater. And as a result, my perspective is, again, that we're highly protective of that groundwater. We value that resource, and I think that's in keeping with what I've seen from City of Santa Rosa. I do, I think, get the equation of what you're talking about, and the one thing I would not be in favor, frankly, of removing the narrative objective here. I think we work with that narrative objective and go forward and develop it into further clarity as we go through a policy development process that's absolutely wide open and public, and that, again, my expectation is we'll all be there talking about it and figuring that out.
And then I also want to, maybe I'm getting too philosophical here, but very briefly, the total quantity of regulations is pretty daunting, I think, for local governments, and that's a very complex problem. It took us a very long time to get a restoration policy to streamline our regulations, which is a razor blade sliver on regulatory relief. So I do want to also tell you that I'm concerned as a citizen, how do we, it's got to be something everybody can live with.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I think we're going to want staff to walk through the changes in the language. And then we'll have a a motion or not on that, a vote on that, and then we'll vote on the major motion if that's acceptable to people.
That's right. Nope.
All right, thank you, Chairman Corbett. Board members, I'm going to walk you through a couple of proposed edits that we made, so bear with me while I bring some of these up. The first one is a change to, I left it open at my desk, a change to the resolution R1-2015-0018. And to remove the word and, so we're also adding and other activities to this statement. Again, this is finding three of the adopting resolution that we are proposing to modify. The next proposed change has to do with change to the staff report. In section 2.
Yeah, I think.
With regards to adding language on the existing regulatory programs with regards to the ocean plan and our coordination and development, State Board is responsible for developing ocean plan criteria, and most importantly, the involvement and coordination with the Ocean Protection Council. So we're adding that to the existing regulatory conditions as described in the staff report.
Can I, sorry to interrupt, do we have extra hard copies that we can provide to anybody that's in the audience that would like to be able to see the draft language? Okay. So I assume, Rita, you'd like a copy and
well, I would just as soon we take 5 minutes to get those copies, because I think it's, you got to involve the audience. So how about if we have a 5 minute break while those are distributed? Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Matt. Cassie, are you within earshot? The old cell phone. Tell Paris they got to call you back.
All right.
Okay, we're back in session.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Corbett. I think we'll just go ahead and take it from the top again to reiterate now that we've passed out a few copies to some of our interested stakeholders. So again, we are proposing that we are modifying the resolution. Let me find the right file. And this is modified finding three of the adopting resolution. We are also modifying, again, the verbiage to include the ocean plan and the write-up on existing conditions, and including the language on the Ocean Protection Council and with regards to coordinating State Board, Ocean Protection Council, and planning and implementing water quality control programs. The proposed change to the actual basin plan language. This was the final paragraph that I was referring to, where Board Member Giusti engaged us in a dialogue about sources of information, where we'll also be
I'm not picking you up on the mic, sorry.
Oh, that's odd. That never happens. Okay.
I noticed you lowered the voice.
I did. I know. I'm sorry. I like getting the MC thing on National Science Foundation. Couldn't help it. That's good. And,
we're going to have you speak.
going from, so you lower your voice too. And finally, we will be striking the term significant in the sentence of the sequel chapter, but retaining the appropriate significance in the discussion of avoidable. But this is the final change to that paragraph. And that summarizes the proposed changes and suggested edits.
So, just to be fair to the public, just so you can show the public wants to speak to that. Okay, hearing none, it's back to the board.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to adopt change sheet 1, 2, 4, and 6. I guess a roll call vote, and then we'll have the underlying motion.
Okay, Board Member Minton.
Real quick, just to clarify, what those numbers mean in the motion.
Number one, modified language through Resolution 215-0018, finding 3. The second one, change sheet staff report for the proposed amendment. Modified language to the staff report, chapter 2, existing conditions for the ocean plan. Number four, change sheet amending the water quality control plan for the North Coast region to update section 3. Modified language to the proposed revisions.
And that's to add the national funds numbers.
And number six, amending the water quality control plan for the North Coast region update section 3 water quality objectives, deleted language from resolution 215-0018, amended 3 on CEQA findings.
Thanks. But it keeps the other CEQA text unsignificant.
Sure.
Any further discussion or comment? Okay. We're signed off with legal, signed off on board, signed off staff, signed off the audit. Call the roll, please.
Board Member Minton.
Aye.
Board Member Noren.
Aye.
Chairman Corbett.
Aye.
Board Member Massey.
Aye.
Board Member Giusti.
Aye. Thank you. So now we need a vote on the amended.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to adopt resolution number R12015-0018.
Second. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Board Member Minton.
Aye.
Board Member Noren.
Aye.
Chairman Corbett.
Aye.
Board Member Massey.
Aye.
Board Member Giusti.
Yes. Aye. Nice job.
Jeremiah, you may have your book back.
Yeah. Thank you.